Ms. Hall, Mr. Steiner.
May it please the court. In this case, Nancy Spiegla was in uniform, on duty, and performing her duties as a correctional officer who was assigned at the main gate of the Westville Correctional Facility on the day in January 2000 when she had a conversation with a supervisor at the prison, Assistant Superintendent Schrader. She asked him about a incident that she had just witnessed shortly before during her shift that involved a top-ranking custody official driving a state vehicle into the facility and not being searched because she was told by the person she was working with that there had been a change of policy relating to searches of state vehicles and that she shouldn't search that vehicle. She asked his supervisor, Mr. Schrader, about this. He told her, no, there had not been a change in policy, that in fact, this is a matter that should be reported through the chain of command. At that point, she indicated that she did not necessarily want to report through the chain of command, wanted to report to Mr. Schrader because it did involve some top custody people, and Mr. Schrader was in charge of the program area of the prison, wasn't directly involved in that chain of command. He said that he would report the matter to the boss, the superintendent of the facility. Now, the Supreme Court decided what we view as a very important case that relates to this area of law, obviously, the Garcetti decision, which, of course, was decided after all briefing was completed, and we appreciate that the court permitted us the opportunity to file a supplemental memorandum relating to Garcetti. In our view, Garcetti sets out a bright-line test for determining whether speech by public employees is protected by the First Amendment. The court held that when public employees make statements pursuant to their official duties, the employees are not speaking as citizens for First Amendment purposes, and the Constitution does not insulate their communications from employer discipline. The court explained in Garcetti that when Attorney Ceballos went to work and performed the task he was paid to perform, Ceballos acted as a government employee. And that seems to be what's kind of critical in the decision of the Supreme Court in Garcetti, that they were acting in their capacity as a government employee. And the fact that, and as I said about Ceballos, the fact that his duties sometimes required him to speak or write does not mean that his supervisors were prohibited from evaluating his performance. And as noted by the court in Garcetti, employees have heightened interest in controlling speech made by an employee in his or her professional capacity. Well, Correctional Officer Spiegel's professional capacity was working in the perimeter area of the prison, specifically on the day in question, and for much of her career she'd been assigned as a person who was involved with searching vehicles that were coming through the gates at the prison. That responsibility involved, clearly, if we look at the trial testimony in this case, it involved her both searching vehicles, and then if problems were discovered, obviously preventing contraband from entering the facility, but also making reports. In the log, there were, in addition to Ms. Spiegel, who testified at the trial, there were other persons who worked on the gate at the time who testified. Mr. Moody, who had worked on the gate, indicated it was the duty of employees assigned to the gate to report employees suspected of transporting contraband, that kind of thing, making reports. He made that comment at page 48 of his testimony, in a transcript page 48. Another officer assigned to the gate, Dukes, indicated that, of course, incidents involving contraband are incidents that were detected by the staff were to be reported to supervisor or, and I think Mr. Mooney indicated, to potentially even to internal affairs, because these are matters of course interest to the personnel in the department. Similar to Attorney Sabalos in the Garcetti case, Spiegel was not acting as a citizen separate from her duties as a correctional officer assigned to maintaining security at the gate when she spoke to Mr. Schrader. She was speaking to a...
what would she have had to do to be speaking as a citizen?
Well, it would have had to be out of the context of her job duties, I believe, Judge.
Well, and that's concrete. That's, don't use the words.
Well, let's say if she were a cook, for example.
She is what she is. I don't want her to be a cook. You tell me, what would she be doing? How would she be speaking as a citizen? Is there about this matter that concerned her?
Well, she would. The problem is that
the problem.
Why don't
tell
you just
me
say if she wrote an op-ed piece?
But if she had gone to, yeah, that's correct. If she had gone to, to a reporter, if it hadn't been a report to a supervisor.
That was the example in Garcetti itself, is speaking to the general public.
Another example, I think, from Garcetti was
what if she'd written a letter to the governor?
That would be a different situation. If it was
why
published,
would that be a
which
different
way would situation? It be classified? That would be an interesting hybrid.
I believe that's correct.
The question that's being asked is it possible to speak as a citizen inside the bureaucracy, or does one have to turn outside? The governor is just the top of the bureaucracy.
Absolutely, you can speak. I think the Supreme Court made it very clear in Garcetti that you can speak as a citizen inside the bureaucracy.
To the question. I asked you a very concrete example. Suppose she wrote all this in a letter to the governor. Would she be speaking as a citizen, or would she be speaking as an employee?
Arguably, she could be.
Arguably? Oh. What is your answer?
She's speaking in that case, assuming the
assume. Just the answer the question.
The governor is the...
Look, just answer the question.
She would be speaking...
Don't answer my question, yes or no, if you can. If you can't, then forget it.
I hadn't really contemplated that, but I would say the answer to that question...
You're really hopeless.
The answer to the question...
Forget it. You can't answer it. You don't want to talk about it. You want to stick to the facts of the case. So forget it.
I don't intend not to answer your question, Judge. I'd say the governor is a supervisory official over the Department of Correction.
First say yes or no, and then explain why. Yes, she's as a citizen, or no?
No, not
no,
as a citizen.
And why?
Because the governor has responsibility over the Department of Correction, direct administrative responsibility over that prison facility. And in fact, it's not like the example that Supreme Court gave in Garcetti of going outside of the institutional structure and speaking to the press or something like that.
To the Speaker of the Indiana House.
That's a different branch of government. I would say that'd be something like speaking to a judge about it. It's not talking to an administrator of the Department of Correction.
So what's your answer? Is that protected speech?
You'd be speaking as a citizen at that point.
Thank you. Now we know where you stand.
Now, it is correct that in the first, opposing counsel has talked about this. In the first decision in this case, the court made a statement that Spiegel had acted beyond the scope of her employment. But in doing so, the court was focusing on the fact that Spiegel had more than a personal motive when she was making this speech, that she was talking about something that amounted potentially to official corruption that could be of public interest, and the court was focused mostly on the question of whether this was a matter of public interest at that point in time. In addition to that, in the original decision in this case, the court was focused primarily on the issue of whether this related to some sort of core functions that Ms. Spiegel was performing at the time. Garcetti, I believe, broadens that view considerably. Garcetti indicates that if you're performing your official duties, whatever they may be, you're acting as an employee, you're performing tasks that you would be expected to perform, such as detecting contraband and then reporting problems about...
Which suggests that perhaps your answer to the earlier questions needs to be amended. I mean, we would need to figure out whether reporting problems to the governor or the Speaker of the House was part of her official duties. Would one not?
That's correct, and that's why I was trying to answer that question
either
in the
yes
way
or
I
no,
did.
Depending on what her official duties are.
That's correct. It depends on what her actual functions are at the facility, what tasks she would be expected to perform as an employee. I think the Supreme Court was clear in Garcetti that we have a concern that employers not be able to prevent employees from properly asserting First Amendment protections by simply overstating what their responsibilities are. But I don't think that's this case. This case involves a correctional officer whose job was to both detect the entry of problems, contraband into the facility, and at the same time report those incidents properly as they might occur. So in this particular case, I think it's pretty clear that Ms. Spiegel was performing her duties, her official duties, when she spoke to Mr. Schrader. And if she was, then she wasn't a citizen acting in that capacity as a citizen when she spoke to him, but she was a public employee speaking to a supervisor. And that is the reason why we believe that Garcetti clearly applies this case and ought to decide it in favor of the defendants.
So could judicial opinions be censored on the theory that when we write judicial opinions, we're just acting within the scope of our employment?
I don't know. Censored by whom would be my question, Judge.
I don't know. Whoever.
I would presume that the decisions of this court would not be subject to censor. Perhaps by colleagues, comments, or whatever.
Maybe you could rephrase the question as, could the court decide not to renew the term of a bankruptcy judge because of what the bankruptcy judge had said in his or her opinions? To which I would suppose the answer is yes. We could.
When the light came on, does that mean my 3 minutes or...
Yes,
or
you want to save your...
I want to just say very quickly, we have addressed these other issues. We think the instructional issues, if we got past Garcetti, are important issues, particularly the two issues that relate to the mandatory instructions, the Mount Healthy, the personal involvement. We think those are important questions. We'd ask the court to reverse the decision of the district court, in this case, the judgment.
Thank you, Mr. Steiner. Mr. Sutherland?
Morning, Judge Posner. If it pleases the court, we have two briefs that this court is taking up, and I'm going to rely upon the facts presented in the first brief, unless the court has some questions about clarifying the facts. Also, I'm going to rely primarily on our briefs' arguments with regard to the jury instructions. We believe we were quite thorough in our analysis there, and I would like to address the Garcetti question that was raised by the expanded briefing. If the court has any other questions regarding the first brief, I'd be glad to address that. Garcetti is not new law for the Seventh Circuit. We believe.
I'm afraid it is, because you see this in one of the things in our previous opinion. The content, form, and context of Spiegel's speech lead us to the conclusion that she acted beyond her employment capacity and spoke as a private citizen on a matter of public concern. That is, it was a matter of public concern, and she was concerned as a citizen. But nevertheless, she was speaking to people within her firm, so within her agency, about matters highly relevant to her employment. That's where Garcetti shifts. We used to emphasize the motive and you know, the nature of the issue. If it was the kind of issue people were interested in, the fact that it was addressed to a superior was not determinative. After Garcetti, it seems to be determinative.
Well, maybe I should clarify my statement, Your Honor, because we believe that, for example, the Garcetti Sabalos case from the Ninth Circuit didn't even discuss whether or not it was citizen speech or speech within the context of a person's job responsibilities. They were all stipulated that it was.
That's why Judge O'Scanlan dissented, and that's why the Supreme Court reversed them. Let me put it to you in the concrete way. Is there any functional difference between what Sabalos did and, for that matter, what Mills did in our post-Garcetti case and what Spiegler did?
Certainly there is, and that's a good question. I was getting to that. In your opinion on Mills, you focused on...
It doesn't make any difference who writes the opinions of this court.
It was post-Garcetti and post-Spiegler. And in that particular case, the sergeant had a supervisory role and was commenting about a policy, and there was evidence that she was attempting to undermine that policy and that she was disciplined. In Sabalos, it was a single event that he was complaining about, not a policy. His job description included evaluating the prosecutorial merits of cases and commenting on and writing them. Those are the same things that occurred in Gonzales. We believe in this particular case, as this court previously analyzed, that this was a challenge to an exception to a general policy which was never authorized by the downtown office.
But why should that make any difference? I mean, what it seems to me is going on is that both Sabalos and Mills complained to higher-ups within the organization about something the organization was doing. And the complaint was a complaint made within the scope of their job duties. And that looks identically what's happened here. An employee of an organization complains to higher-ups within the organization on the job, in uniform, about something that's going on in the organization.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. The language in Garcetti talks about core duties, essential duties, ordinary duties, core function. That is similar language to what you used in the first Spiegler case and in clarifying what was really being looked at, if not determinative, at least in aiding the court in determining whether or not that person spoke as a citizen. In this particular case, if you use the term duty in the jurisprudence context of negligence, she had no duty to go out there and challenge those high-ranking officers, including an assistant superintendent, because she was told to do just the opposite. If she had a duty,
Now I'm really puzzled, because Sabalos had no duty to make a pest of himself, nor did Mills a pest of herself.
I do disagree with that, Your Honor. Sabalos' job description, including evaluating the meritorious value of cases...
Forget Sabalos. Think about Mills.
Okay, and Mills...
Mills had no duty to speak up after that meeting. She could have kept silent without anybody disciplining her. But she decided that she would protest.
Well, I see the fact situation. It's very brief in the opinion, but the facts suggest that she was invited by the immediate supervisor or the chief for an explanation of this. So in some sense, as a supervisor, she may have been invited to comment upon policy. One can assume that if you're running out a program and you're telling everybody about it, you might accept some comment. What she was disciplined about was her response to that, namely, it was some evidence that she might undermine or try to enlist community support to take her position. That is quite different than what we have here. We have Nancy Spiegler taking a calculated risk that she is going to speak.
I don't see how it would be either practical or consistent with the rationale of Garcetti for us to say, we're now going to try to decide how important it was or how systematic it was. The whole point of Garcetti is that the federal courts are not, in the name of the First Amendment, going to take over intra-workplace relations. But that's exactly what you're asking us to do, and indeed what the jury has done. The jury has awarded more than $200,000 for a job transfer on the basis of intra-workplace relations.
I don't think that's doing justice to what the evidence was, Your Honor. Please. What happened here was not exactly that at all. What Garcetti said was, and the Supreme Court deferred to the criticisms of its major opinion raised in the dissent, what Garcetti said is that a person can speak in the workplace, it is not dispositive, even if it is referred to or might be included in a general job description, and that, that if you don't protect First Amendment speech in the workplace,
where
it would chill.
In Garcetti.
Where is what, Your Honor? I'm sorry.
General job description. The example they give is the Pickering example. A letter to a newspaper had no official significance, bore similarities to letters submitted by numerous citizens every day. Now, you want to define some new category, an employee who has not been directed to submit this particular type of complaint.
The complaint that she was raising, Your Honor, was a complaint about policy, and that's the big difference. In fact, she couldn't have been disciplined if she just kept her mouth quiet. That's one of the elements to show that she's acting as a citizen. In fact, if she didn't say anything, there would still be this very suspicious conduct, which if you were a citizen at the main gate, you would have called 911 to talk about what you would regard as a crime in progress based upon the suspicious conduct of these high-ranking officials. That policy, mind you, was not even authorized or approved or vetted by downtown. And that's because every witness that testified at the trial said, prison security is everyone's business, and we all know that the majority of contraband coming in comes in through employees. And why would anybody make that exception unless they were having some ulterior purpose?
If we're adopted, would involve the courts in all sorts of hair splitting. What exactly is the job of this employee? What's in the job description? We know that's not determinative. Would this person have been expected to speak to her supervisor or a supervisor about this? Do we really want to get into that? I don't.
If you're saying that there is no First
Amendment... We're pretty remote from the marketplace of ideas, aren't we?
If you're suggesting there's no First Amendment speech within the workplace unless there's a public announcement outside of the workplace, I don't think that's what Garcetti holds.
That would be a nice, clean rule.
It would be. But
so what's wrong with it?
Because it's too restrictive.
Why?
Here's why. The court looks to other suggested avenues like whistleblower statutes. Indiana has one. It's been around since 1971. It doesn't apply to public employees. Never has. There's only been one case that
that's
it has...
That's not helping your argument, actually.
What is that?
Yeah. That's not
There's
doing
an internal mechanism. She actually complained.
But
you actually asked, did she write the governor? There was an invitation.
The Supreme Court didn't say that free speech starts where whistleblowing statutes end, right? Didn't say that. That wouldn't make any sense. That wouldn't be a good rule. Is that what you're advocating?
I think what I'm advocating, Your Honor, is that the Supreme Court said that you need to look at the job description as one element, the core functions. And if you are talking about a lowly employee, which
that's
is a...
That's too nebulous, really. Core functions. What does that mean?
But that's what the court said. And what does it mean? Now, here's what I would suggest as a possible test, if I could.
They didn't lay down a core functions test.
I don't think there was a test laid down for that. What it said was that it was...
I don't like your core functions test. It's too vague. And it also seems to me it's too remote from the First Amendment. The core of the First Amendment is not what people say inside the workplace.
The core
it's
of the first
part of the marketplace of ideas.
If the responsibility is on employees to ferret out illegal or suspicious conduct, and you're requiring them to speak outside of the agency, then what you're also suggesting is the Mount Healthy test shouldn't apply. Because if the Mount Healthy test requires the court to examine whether there was a balancing and a consideration of both how disruptive it might be and how efficiency might be affected if this person spoke outside, there is a penalty for speaking outside for most police agencies. There is a policy which says you shall not speak outside. So you do so at considerable risk. The policy which allows you to speak inside and which encourages inside First Amendment speech should be supported by the Spiegel previous decision and by this decision. The question you raise is an interesting question. There is no additional evidence. They didn't suggest any in the brief. The record has probably 30 exhibits which include her job description. which include the personnel and practice manual, which include the ethics part, which include the various contracts that she signed. There's enormous amount of information there. So that court, that jury, listened to all that. And the court, that is the Supreme Court, said it is a fact-sensitive issue. Even if it's a legal question, it's still a fact-sensitive issue. That fact-sensitive issue went down on this court's direction for a summary judgment balancing test under Mount Healthy, and then it went to trial. We have done everything we have required under this court's law. And, in fact, there has been no suggestion by our review of all the cases that have come up since Garcetti that any of the trial judges have any difficulty reconciling Spiegela and the language in Spiegela and Garcetti. Because if there's going to be any First Amendment speech left in the workplace that doesn't require the person to publish it to the newspaper, then this is the case here. She sees clearly suspicious conduct. She brings it to the attention of the supervisor who says, I don't even know of this exception. It makes no sense, but I'll bring it up. And then right after that, she is transferred. You have the consequence. You have the causation issue before the jury. The jury finds in our favor. We think that the damages are substantial. She could not do the job. She complained physically. She was crying herself to sleep because she could not physically do this as a 50-year-old woman. She was asked to go up and down towers, something she hadn't done in, I think, 8 or 9 years. She held that first gate, that main gate position since 1993.
They're all irrelevant to the Garcetti issue.
Sorry, sir?
Your points are irrelevant to the Garcetti issue.
In the Garcetti analysis, Your Honor, they suggested that if a person is in the workplace and they bring a matter of public policy, of public concern to the attention in a private conversation or within the institution, that is not dispositive. It can be First Amendment speech. If you're suggesting now that you want to decide what that line is, I'm suggesting to you that if there is a duty clearly defined, then you could hold that person responsible and they could be disciplined for not following their duty. But there is no duty for that. In fact, the duty is just the opposite. The duty is to comply, to respect a policy decision which has been announced, not to go out there, as Sergeant Moody said, don't go out there, you'll get your ass chewed. And in fact, I already had. There were three other witnesses that observed the same policy or the same practice.
You're saying every whistleblower has First Amendment protection.
No, of course not. The Supreme Court says
so. But you're never under a duty to, you know, do dishonest things and lie and so forth, right? So every time you blow the whistle, you're stepping outside, or you're complaining about something that's improper, right?
Garcetti reminds that not every complaint is constitutionalized just because the plaintiff wants it so. And that is a legal conclusion that the court made in its first decision after looking at all the balancing factors. And it seems to me, and maybe I'm reading more into the original Spiegel a decision, but Gonzalez and all these precedent cases seem to have a balancing test which was more closely aligned to Garcetti, clearly more aligned to Garcetti than what the Ninth Circuit was doing in their own jurisdiction. And so what we have here is we have no confusion from what I can see in the circuits, because there were over 140 cases cited throughout the country citing to Spiegel. Since Garcetti, there have been three or four decisions. I don't see any confusion about that, because what they're looking for is whether or not it was part of that person's responsibility. I would say this. If you had three witnesses, as we did, see the same conduct as Nancy Spiegela did, they would have been a gaggle of guards prohibited from complaining. And the fact that they complain about this very serious matter would have caused them to be disciplined. In my view of this, or I think as the evidence presented and as the jury heard it, Nancy Spiegela took a chance in reporting this outside of the chain of command, outside of her suggestion of Sergeant Moody, and it proved to be her undoing. That's the First Amendment speech that we're trying to protect.
Okay,
thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Soto. Mr. Steiner, how much time does he have? 3 minutes? Do you have anything further?
Just very briefly, I
want to say, in this particular case, Spiegela was reporting an incident to a supervisor that she would be expected to report. Yes, she did step outside of the comfort level a bit, because you could always say, I think as was being discussed, that when you talk about someone who might be a supervisor or whatever, you are stepping, you know, maybe outside of a comfort zone. But in this particular case, it did fit within her duties, as we would understand, her official duties as an employee. The only thing that was maybe a little bit out of the ordinary in this particular case is that rather than going through the direct chain of command, after she had gotten maybe bad information from the sergeant, she decided to speak to a top supervisor about this matter. But that's what she did. We believe that Garcetti does control at this point in time and would ask that the judgment of the district court be reversed. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you, counsel.